Welcome to Wabanaki Windows. I'm Donna Loring. This is part two of our two-part series on the Wabanaki Alliance and the bills before the legislature this session. Last time we began an important conversation about the Wabanaki Alliance and some things to think about this coming legislative session and what they mean for the Wabanaki nations. We talked about sovereignty as a lived reality of our governments and our people. Today we continue that discussion. For purposes of full disclosure, I am the Vice President of the Wabanaki Alliance. This session's bills are about fairness under federal Indian law. They are about economic opportunity, jurisdiction, environmental protection, and the fundamental right of our nations to govern ourselves as other federally recognized tribes do across the country. Joining me are Wabanaki leaders who are directly engaged in this work. Mullian Bryant, Executive Director of the Wabanaki Alliance, Dr. Darren Ranko, citizen of the Penobscot Nation and professor at the University of Maine, and our special guests are Chief Clarissa Sabatis of the Houlton Band of Maliseets and Chief Kirk Francis of the Penobscot Nation. So good morning, everyone. It's good to have you on the show. I'm going to start out by talking about the legislative hearing that we had yesterday, and there were two bills in front of the hearing committee. And Mullian, do you want to explain to us about those bills?
Sure. So we started off the day with LD 395, which is an act to make federal beneficial laws applicable to Wabanaki nations in Maine. And both of these bills are sponsored by Senator Rachel Talbot Ross, who has been a longtime champion for these measures. And a lot of the bills, whether they've passed or failed in the past, have been sponsored by the senator throughout her career. So the first bill is a really narrow focus on just having federal laws passed by the United States government with provisions meant to benefit federally recognized tribes to have those apply kind of no questions asked in Maine. The way the Settlement Act operates right now, there's a clause that basically says the state can step in and block the Wabanaki nations in Maine from accessing this body of law if the state feels it preempts or impacts their jurisdiction. So we've seen versions of this bill before. One of them got pretty far. Supermajorities in each chamber was vetoed by Governor Mills. And then we narrowly lost a veto override in the House. So a lot of these lawmakers are familiar with this bill. They've heard a lot of this testimony before, and we'll see how it shakes out this time around. We had really great support. All the tribal chiefs are in support. The governor's office did testify in support through her legal counsel, and we had a great showing of our allies and friends from around the state. And then in the afternoon, we had LD 785, and this is sort of the quote-unquote task force omnibus bill. We talked about this, Darren and I, at length in the last recording, and this was the work from 2019 where the chiefs all sat on a task force with state leaders and folks from the governor's office, attorney general's office, and MITSIC, and they studied the task force, and together they came up with a set of consensus recommendations over a host of jurisdictional areas, you know, fishing game, taxation, natural resources, criminal civil jurisdiction, all kinds of things, a grab bag of tribal sovereignty and how to make all of this better. So those consensus recommendations have been put into different pieces of testimony over the years. This is the latest iteration of an omnibus bill approach. And we had a very similar public hearing in the afternoon, minimal opposition and lots of good support in the room and online.
So Chief Francis, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us today. So that the 395 beneficials bill that they discussed, what's your take on that bill?
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me again. I think, you know, the Federal Beneficial Act bill has always been, you know, one of the most important bills to me. I mean, so when you look at this whole issue in totality, whether you're talking about civil, criminal, jurisdiction, whether you're talking about environmental laws, all of those things that the tribe has not been able to be on par with the rest of Indian country is all a result of that specific section in my mind. So so what we've been really trying to do is make sure people understand that we're not asking to be any better or any less than anyone else. We're just looking for parity in terms of how the law applies to us. So, as Mullian said, the really problematic provision in the Settlement Act is the one that dealing with that issue. And the hard thing is that, they're in, it's not like the state has to object to it applying in Maine the minute it's on the House or the Senate floor. It doesn't have to object a week later. It doesn't have to object a year later. It can, if the tribes try to access an opportunity 10 years down the road, they could object then. And the other problematic language with the with that piece is, preempts or effects. And so almost anything can affect state law, and it's but there's never a threshold to really have to say why that's harmful to the state or why it's there's just no process to validate the objections. So the tribes find themselves in this kind of limbo all the time. Things have come up over the years, like the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act, for example, and the ability to use licensed physicians from other states that Indian Health Service allows. The state has challenged that, and that was years after that act had passed. So it's really an important piece of legislation. It seems to be the one that's rooted most in contentiousness in terms of people wanting to shift that paradigm to put the burden on the state to have to go through some process if they're going to object to it, federal Indian law applying to the tribes in Maine.
Yeah, that particular bill has really done some damage to the tribes, and that's that language I understand. When I was even when I was back in the legislature and working for the governor, the tribes had always tried to address that piece in the claims, and they always failed. Legislature always failed to pass that change of language. One area that I think really bothers me to this day is the effect it had on Passamaquoddy, Pleasant Point, the water. And that's a human right. And it bothers me today because even though the legislature passed that and it is a law that they needed to address that water issue. Ask them, has your water issue been corrected? Are you getting running water? Is it clean water now? What's the answer to that? The answer is going to be no. So even with all of that, that still hasn't been fixed. That's my rant. So haven't heard from you, Darren.
Thanks, Donna, and thank you, Chief Francis Mullian. I think this bill, it was you, Donna, that I first probably had back in the early, maybe 20 plus years ago. We talked about this element of the Settlement Act, and you taught me so well to, the implications of it. And it's just, I think it's become clear, clearer and clearer in the last 20 plus years, right? I mean, we've had, all the issues with fighting for the VAWA pieces, that became another implication of this exemption language. I think like all the legislation that is supportive of our sovereignty as tribes is obviously it harms us. It harms our tribes. You mentioned the Passamaquoddy water situation. There's a whole host of other things, but it to me this one also very clearly harms other Mainers. I think, by barring us from frameworks for funding, frameworks for all sorts of regulatory engagements, the communities that surround us will also suffer by a lack of support for our sovereignty. And I think, I think that argument is made more in terms of the more omnibus, the other legislation, because it's, a deeper cut into our sovereignty. But I think there's also that element of the federal funding, the other things that are disrupted in this language from that part of the legacy of our Settlement Act. And yeah, I just to hear the ways in which people try to reframe it as something, to me goes back to the point I've been trying to make repeatedly on this show and other public spaces, is that I fail to see the idea that things that benefit us somehow would, it's a zero-sum game, that would somehow harm the state. I just think that default presumption is like one of the, it's almost like a reaction. It's like you try to even ask like the state, like, and the governor or the attorney general, like, why have you said in this bill, like, we have a problem with it? Like, it's almost like you can't quite get an answer to it. It's just sort of like the momentum of, oh, well, possibly, just the possibility of your more power would reduce our power in some way. But I can never quite get to the bottom part of that, because us being sovereign and in all these different ways and having these resources, it makes all, not only the tribes more secure, better, but the rest of the state as well. So I think, like, to me, that's just another example of that issue.
Molly, do you have anything more on this beneficials bill?
Just quickly, when we were working on the Violence Against Women Act main statute, I remember we had a great public hearing, lots of moving testimony from Wabanaki women talking about the need for this. Tribal leaders were very much in support. And in the work session, there was just so much space and time and attention and energy given to the rights of the perpetrators. Some folks on the Judiciary Committee seem so concerned about are the tribes able to do sentencing correctly? Where are they going to go to jail? How are the jails going to be? Or, and just so much like love and care for potential violent people against Native women. And that's just so indicative of the invisibility of our rights and our freedoms and just our basic safety, that the bulk of the decision-making process was about the rights of the offenders. So I remember speaking at that work session and reminding them to consider the missing and murdered Indigenous women epidemic and just the harm against women all the time in our communities. And they ended up, obviously, we got the bill passed, but there's points in this process where it becomes about zooming out and looking at the bigger picture of like this work feels like we're doing it on like one law at a time, but it really is about this shift towards more humanity recognized for Wabanaki people.
And what's interesting in the bill is, one of the biggest entities that objects to the bill is the Maine Forest Products Council, right? And so what's interesting about that is their explanation for that is they don't want to be under multiple regulatory regimes and are concerned about, that organization is concerned about, natural resource protection, and which is interesting. The tribe has had a forest in operation for 40 years. We've participated in that industry very responsibly. But what's interesting about that objection is everyone that sits on that council, which, by the way, they have not allowed the tribes to get on that council, but everybody that sits on that council, their companies operate in multiple states with tribal sovereignty fully intact. So they make it work elsewhere, but there just seems to be this protective kind of bubble in Maine about making sure it's kind of the last frontier in this kind of space. So I think that it was indicative, and they were the only ones to object yesterday too, which was good.
I found that kind of puzzling a bit. Not really. It was like sitting back in the early years of my legislative career, listening to the objections. Just, they're the same. They never change. So I'm thinking, well, it's it got some pushback this time, I think, and that was good. So welcome, Chief Sabatis, to the show.
Hey there.
We're talking. Discussing the LD 395, the beneficial law, right now. I'm wondering if you have comments about that.
Just listening to Chief Francis talk about, a forest product industry having issues with multiple jurisdictions, even if there wasn't tribes, the fact that they're involved in multiple states that have different jurisdictions, I mean, the argument just doesn't really make any sense. But as far as the bill goes yesterday, I mean, I said this multiple times, regardless of where we land at the end of this, I think that it's always important for these full hearings to take place, and to have these full bills out in front and center so that people can understand them and hear about them. I think that the work that's been happening over the last 7 or 8 years especially has been about that. I mean, the alliance we've seen what a benefit it's been having the alliance, being able to do this with organizations and throughout the state, and really putting our issues out in front so that people are seeing them and aware of them. And I will repeat myself from yesterday. Coming in as a new chief, I attended an event at the governor's mansion, and there were a bunch of legislators from Maine there, and I was really shocked to hear that some of them didn't even know there were tribes in Maine, as lawmakers, or that they didn't know that there were 4 tribes in Maine. So to me, this is another way to make sure that they're learning about these, even if they are complex. It's just another mechanism to do that as well, even if we don't end up having passage of these at the end of the session.
Yeah, that's one thing that that kind of reminds me of. There was some talk about not having public hearings for these bills, if I'm correct. And the reasoning behind that was, well, they're just going to get vetoed anyway, so what's the point? Well, the point is that these are proposed laws, and the purpose of public hearings is to educate the public.
Yeah.
And any political candidate or any legislator who doesn't understand that needs to like get a clue.
Yeah.
So these public hearings are very important educationally and for people to understand why these bills are here and why they're here now. Kirk.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I think one of our biggest things through all of the sausage making process here is to make sure that we were getting, full-throated hearings on these bills. I think the value of hearings is not about the wins and losses at the end of the day. It's again about keeping these conversations at a high level, keeping them fresh, keeping momentum going, keeping all of those things that are important to us intact, keeping our friends engaged, all of it. So it's one of the things we kind of insisted on. And I think it was important, and I know Chief Sabatis and I worked on it through our representatives a lot, just trying to make sure that now we know at the end of the day that it's probably not going to be fully intact. I don't know what that looks like as we sit here. But I never understood, well, look, we're not going to get it anyway, so let's just leave it alone. I think I think it was would be unfair to Rachel. It would be unfair to a lot of the bill sponsors that have worked really hard on it. So I thought yesterday went really well, and I was happy that the people of Maine really are shifting. That was the first hearing yesterday where you didn't see the law firms from the past kind of showing up. You didn't see state people that were involved in the state negotiation on that side show up. You didn't see a lot of those people that are usually trying to oppose the bill show up. So I think the work of the alliance, the work of a lot of other people in terms of bringing that level of support. And also, it was really, really refreshing to see tribal youth there yesterday and speaking on these issues. And it's just hard to believe watching that, like those girls that spoke. And I know Mullion knows one of them pretty well, but I mean, I just remember those kids having sleepovers at my house, and now they're standing at a podium in the state house, which is pretty powerful stuff. So I think that so I think those hearings are opportunities to kind of highlight all of that.
Darren?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting to hear I mean, this is part of what disturbs me about the political process, and I think there's always discussion of like, should we be at the state begging, blah 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 blah. I don't see that as what's going on here. I think we have this history of how our diplomacy works and how our cultures, show up and speak the truth to the situation. And I think there's just this fundamental orientation, that as I've heard, repeatedly, like how great you were yesterday, Chief Sabatis, or others, just expressing ongoing harms and speaking our truths and speaking our things are we struggle with, and it will always be up to us to speak for us, right? And I think that's the power of this going as we have for centuries, going into these places that are not of our making, and really speaking our truth. So I think, to me, that's really powerful work. And the wins and losses are, one way of measuring that. But I like the measurement that we had these young people there speaking this truth. I think that's a way to measure this. That I would say, like, our ancestors would have been really inspired by, to say, like, let's measure it not in the win loss column, but that we have this future that we can really be hopeful for. So yeah, anyway, I just want to say that to the idea that this is mere politics. I get it is politics, but it is more than that as we show up.
Mullion.
You sure?
Go for
So I get a little hot under the collar when I hear folks, say that we're pandering or this is a dog and pony show. Why are we down there all the time putting power in the state's hands? The power is within us. The power is within those youth feeling and bold enough to go there and speak their truth and talk about their history. And I go back to 20 plus years ago, my great aunt Donna Loring bringing me there as a teenager. And sure, you could have said, why are you engaging? This system doesn't fit us, but you can also say, look at the changes we've made in these 20 years since that day you brought me in there. Look at the improvements we've brought for our people. It's not nothing. And what do we gain by taking our ball and going home and letting the state trample on our rights? Because I guarantee you they will if we don't show up repeatedly and speak out. I think about when our bingo here tried to put the pull tab machines in, and the state just came and took them out, and they were, justified in doing so under their interpretation of the Settlement Act. So I think in the overall energy of this whole thing, it does matter, and the unity is so important. And logistically, it does matter because our rights will be violated if we don't show up in these spaces.
And that's a great point. As I started this journey into tribal leadership, it was interesting being around people, no matter what you thought about their politics, where you people like Jim Sapier, people like Brenda Fields, people like all of them that really saw the value in getting involved. And it's a ridiculous thing to say that we're somehow getting on our knees for the state because we're dealing with a practical reality of a legal framework that needs to be fixed. And our ancestors, even before contact, I'm sure, exercised diplomacy with other tribes. Were they getting on their knees when they worked out hunting ground agreements with the Mi'kmaq or whatever it would be? Sovereign governments have to have a diplomatic arm to be able to deal with the realities. And I think what people miss in this is we shouldn't be asking the state for anything. Well, we're not. We shouldn't be down there or whatever it is, whether that's DC or Augusta or wherever. But the problem is if you don't go to the source and deal with these issues, we're just sitting in an echo chamber telling each other what we are, and there's no practical benefit to that. And as Mullian states, I mean, you're at the table or you're on the menu, and it's and that's the way I feel. And I think that that approach, I met John Trudell some years ago. He came to Penobscot, and he was about as anti-government as you could get. And I was telling him about the situation in Maine, and this very subject came up about trying to balance, how much we were actually, and he his thing was like just practical reality. It's the way it is, and you have to. I think we all agree we shouldn't have to. I think we all agree that we don't want to, but at the end of the day, this is where we're at. We know what we are. We're sovereign. We're sovereign by fact. But I equate it to like running a pro athletic team, except you're the only team in the league that has an agreement that you can only use amateur players. And you're trying to fight for equality to be able to compete in that. You're still a professional athletic team, but you're not given the tools to be able to succeed like everyone else. And that's really what we're fighting for.
Chief Sabatis.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm going to go rewind all the way back to Darren's comment. I like how he talks about looking at different ways to measure this. And I think that that's how I've felt about this for a while. I look at, again, the work that's taken place, even before us, but the change in the atmosphere in the state of Maine and the support that we have from friends and allies, it has grown in exponentially. And some of that is just because they are more aware of what's happening with us. I think we have to be out there and having these conversations. We can know that we're sovereign. That is a fact. But the reality is that MCSA, or the Implementing Act and the Settlement Act, are still there. And we can't just pretend them away. I don't know. And this is our way of going to the table and trying to have meaningful change to those things that really create barriers in our lives that maybe no one else has to deal with, and that we know we probably shouldn't have to deal with. But no, I agree with Molly Ann and Chief Francis, and we can't hide from this. It's not going away, and it won't help us to not be at the table.
So, Somalian, let's move on to LD 785. Do you want to talk a little bit about that bill?
Sure. And we're lucky to have two chiefs with us who sat on the task force that crafted these recommendations put into different pieces of law. So this bill is the bulk of those task force recommendations from 2019, and it's had a few different iterations. LD 2094 was the first version that immediately came out of the task force, and the legislative session cut short by COVID kind of stopped the momentum around that bill. And then we re-entered the COVID era legislature with Zoom hearings, and we had the bill LD 1626. This was a time where it picked up a lot of momentum, a lot of attention. We were really growing the Wabanaki Alliance Coalition. There was a very long Zoom public hearing on this bill. I think it went over 8 hours. And this was included in the mix with a negotiated compromise bill, LD 585, which we've talked a lot about, and also the Sabaic Water Quality Bill, LD 906. So these were all in the air at the same time, and there was different strategies going on. The governor was not a fan of LD 1626, the large omnibus bill. It did not reach her. It did not come off the appropriations table. The other two bills did pass into law. So this LD 785 is very much, pretty much identical to LD 1626. We got some of those recommendations done in other pieces of legislation, some of the criminal jurisdiction and taxation things. So this is a lot of those recommendations, and we had a very, I think, positive overall public hearing around this piece of work as well yesterday.
So, when you look at this 785 and that you said 1626, right? And that LD 1626 did not reach your desk. What's your feeling about LD 785? You think that that's what kind of future do you see for that bill as a whole? We'll put it that way. And you don't have to be nice if you don't want to. How do you see that moving forward in this through committee and whatever? Molly, and I'm going to ask you.
Well, the governor sent her legal counsel, Jerry Reed, to testify in support of the bill. I don't know if that signals full love for the components of the bill as they are. So I bet in the work session there'll be talk about amendments to this bill or changes all around. So the work session is always the place for those types of changes. And I think whatever is hopefully moved from that committee will be what the governor is working with. And I think if it's the version it is right now, I don't know that she'll support that. The governor is also running for United States Senate, and she has a very progressive opponent in Graham Plattner, who also came and testified in support of these bills. So that is definitely in the equation as well right now. I think if it's an amendment that she is more in favor of, it could be a different outcome. So I think it remains to be seen what language is voted out of committee.
Chief Francis.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think as we talked about earlier on the importance of the hearings, I don't think, for me, I'm not optimistic that these bills are going to stay intact in totality. But we're trying to figure out ways right now to make some real meaningful progress on this. And so I don't know what that looks like at the end of the day. We're thinking through a lot of the stuff in the bill. Quite frankly, I think the tribes have been very fair in this bill in terms of eliminating gaming issues, trying to address some of the environmental concerns in terms of authority and all of those types of things. And so, what we're looking to do is just make sure we find some kind of lane to make some meaningful progress. I mean, look, the governor has been clear that she takes issue with a lot of the bill in terms of there are some things that they like, but they're in terms of passing one big package, I think is going to be difficult. And it's all kind of cloaked in the legal framework. Where do things fit? Where's Congress's responsibility in some of these issues? Where's the state in some of these? So the conversation, as you know, can get very complicated with what ifs all day long. But there are states, to look at that have these models and that function pretty well. And my hope is that again, we take a lot of the good work here from a lot of from a lot of people, and we find some solutions.
Chief Sabatis.
Yeah, I think, my views kind of align with both Molly and Chief Francis. We've been having a lot of conversations, and I as well don't foresee this bill at the end of the session fully intact where it is today. I again talked about the importance of at least having that as part of the hearings so that everybody can see it. But I think it's important to state too, when we're talking about getting these incremental changes, it doesn't mean that the things that we're agreeing to take out are not important. It's just that if we know that there's no way we can get come to consensus on things, where can we move forward with, being cognizant of our time and our the job that we have in front of us. So, while we might take gaming and different natural resources related things out in the beginning, because there's just a lot of heartburn and creates a lot of questions and what ifs, it's not that we don't hope and plan for this to down the road be part of this and included in it. It's just for now, we really have to look at what is doable. So again, I don't really know exactly what it will look like at the end of this. We're still, having those conversations with the governor's office. But I think it's all movement in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point, Chief, too, on the it doesn't mean these things are just gone forever. It's really just about trying to put a product together. I personally believe I'm really excited about where we are. And I think, as we sit here today, I think we're literally 10 months away from things go well this fall. I think we're literally 10 months away from having some big shifts in this paradigm. And so I'm excited about that. I think this work session, this session rather, is I see more of a as a foundational session for us to continue to build on what we want to accomplish going forward. It's been 6 years since the task force, and some things have gotten done, some things haven't, and I'm proud of the things we've gotten done. So I've gotten away from, I have to temper my patience sometimes, and just try to look at this in the long haul. Seeing those kids yesterday tells you, like, this ball's not going anywhere anytime soon. And so we just do our job, lay the foundation, make some progress. And I think in our time, we're gonna see some real change.
I agree.
Darren?
Yeah, no, I think that's thanks, Chief, for that. I that's you said the part out loud that I've been thinking. I think that's in that shift, yesterday seemingly from a governor and attorney general that. I mean, that just, well, yeah, again, I think based on past interactions, we're probably not, super optimistic about their positions or what they'll sign off on. But I think just that, I mean, that, in my opinion, that makes what has been happening in this last several months and the sessions worth it, right? So there's like a shifting in, of public positions. I think last time we were talking about, and my reaction to, this resistance to a bill that solves all these issues, together. people saying it's too much too soon. I mean, I always said, like, well, would they have voted against the Civil Rights Act in 1964? Because that's the same logic that they said, that you shouldn't vote for that because it was too many things in this law that went too fast, too far. And, we just had MLK Day, and like he was so articulate about what is it when the person who says they're your friend is saying your basic rights all together in one single piece of legislation is too much to ask for, and I think that to me has always been like shocking because I think they would think of themselves as being like, yeah, I would have been on the Civil Rights Act, like I would have voted for it, I would have fought for it, that sort of thing. But with us, it's sort of like, oh, what, this is too much too soon or whatever. I think so that idea has been, and I'm hoping like we've shifted that, framing of things in a productive way. And again, I think our diplomacy is always like that. I mean, our traditional treaty councils were, things that happened over years, often, right? That our leaders would go and, into the dangerous foreign places, be that the Casco Bay area or to Boston, and they would be obviously outnumbered and whatever, and they would speak this truth to protect and our people and articulate our vision of the world. So I think that'll always be to me the core of what our leaders do these days. And it's just I feel so thankful that the alliance is an expression of our traditional forms of diplomacy as Wabanaki people working together. I think that's a really important part of this work. It actually calls out what I would consider the best of who we are as Wabanaki people. To work together is the genius of our diplomatic frameworks and being in relation, not with just each other, but with presumptive enemies, I think is those are the frameworks that we bring to this that make us powerful and able to affect change. So to me, again, it's both sides of this.
Yeah, I have two things I want to say. I really like what you said, Darren, about the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And what my thought is, you're right. If in fact we treated the Civil Rights Act like we're treating this legislation, we'd still be debating the 1964 Civil Rights Act, and nothing would have occurred. So I like that. That was a good example. But also the fact that when the executive throws out pieces of, I'm gonna call it pieces of red meat, and in the form of I don't know, gaming or iGaming or whatever, and this, you can get this, you can get that, if you're cooperative, what happens then? What happens is, you pit pe you pit the tribes against each other. And I think that that was the intent. In my own personal opinion, that was the intent. And it's very treacherous here, because we have to walk that line. Actually, I think we're doing it. There's been some rough going. We have to be careful not to lose our tempers and jump in, which I find myself wanting to do. If we kind of hold our fire here and let things calm down and just move steadily forward, I think that's the answer right now, anyway. Not to say we're gonna let what we think go later, but right now, nope. Mullian, go to you.
Yes, I agree with all that. I really appreciate what Darren was saying about the Wabanaki Alliance kind of promoting our traditional values, and we're doing that within this system that disrespects us constantly and undermines those values and doesn't fully embrace us or understand us. So here we are running this organization, seeking to unify the tribal perspective while you have the powers that be actively trying to divide us on issues. And I think that sometimes that means our decisions take longer and it gets messier. But I also think that's part of our tradition. I remember being young, going to council meetings, and folks would be yelling at each other. And I think, oh my, oh no, our tribe hates each other. Like, these people are so mean. But at the end of it, there's hugging and there's crying, there's taking care of each other, there's coming together when there's tragedies in the communities. And we are so close-knit that when you're in those kind of family settings, I feel like we're all family, and those are the people you're quickest to snap at or take for granted or misinterpret or take things personal. And I'm so proud of us that we weather that we are actively healing from our traumatic history. And each time we can kind of take our time carefully through these decisions, even if it feels hurtful and harmful sometimes, and we have to forgive each other and accept all of each other. That's so powerful. And that's standing up to those colonial systems that would really seek to divide us permanently.
Chief Francis.
Well, I think, all great points. And, for me, it's like, overcoming Mullian said that like these issues and these efforts are about a lot more than simply getting a bill passed, right? It's about our presence, our rightful place in the state, all of those things, which all of those things and the tribes working together and all of that really instills a sense of pride. And because as we point out, we tend to be tough on each other, more so than others. And I think because the situation we're really angry with is like unreachable, right? So there's no place to go but laterally. So I think curing a lot of that also helps in that aspect. So like our communities have always been extremely proud places. We know who we are. We know what the difference between right and wrong in this space, all of those things. But again, I think what you're seeing with the work of many, the Alliance and others is, a shift in the needle really moving. Now, we could talk all day about the history of the tribe in this administration, but the mere fact that there are discussions going on at all, the mere fact that you have her chief legal counsel at testifying, I think, for the first time in favor of tribal bills. Maybe that's not fair. Maybe there have been some that they have, but like these jurisdictional bills, I think it sends a loud message that the tribes are here. They need to be dealt with, and that is that's really important. And I think I would like, I think a year from now, 2 years from now, where we've made a lot more progress, you could see a day where we stop making documentaries about being visible again and about and all of that. And I hope people will want to be the right side of that documentation. And so I think these efforts go a long ways in accomplishing a lot of things beyond simply passing law.
Darren.
Yeah, sorry. There's a lot of people are trying to contact me right now. As always, I'm just super popular. Thanks for having me today. I agree. I mean, what Chief Francis just said made me think about, that the work that James Francis had done, and the invisible, like, which it just made me think, like, oh, we had done this whole thing where we were invisible and trying to tell that story, and then this like counter edge to that of being like, 20 plus years later, we're visible. Like I think that just really struck my imagination in a really amazing way. And I think I was talking to another tribal person who does work in this space, and it's like they're going up for there in their organization trying to go up for an award, and it's like, oh, it's like, is this the time or place for us to With all that's going on in the world, like to tell our story and to be like, hey, yay, look at me and look at what we can accomplish, that sort of thing. And, just how we, that internal dialogue as native people, sometimes we like are not the best at telling the story of how we make progress or turn those corners and just the kinds of potential for shame that we have in trying to stand out or any of those things. And I think, yeah, I just I think taking a moment for that, and not that we've finished our work in any of these spaces, but I think it is really important that we recognize, the progress that's been made and how we're really shaping our own future. That level of hope or that kind of a message is also what will bring in our youth. I think that's where they see our future collectively, and I think that's really powerful. And I think while I wasn't there, it seemed like that's what we heard from the young people that testified.
Million?
I would toss it to Chief Sabatis. I don't know if
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think all of this is great, and I keep thinking back like to all these things that we've gone through over the last 9 years that I've been around, and I can remember when I was campaigning and talking to some people about, how we really need to be coming together as Wabanaki nations and not allowing things to divide us and make us step away from state government because we have to be there unified. It's tough when you have four separate and distinct tribal nations who are sovereigns, but when we come to the state, I mean, people see us as ones, I think sometimes, but as Wabanaki, we know that our strength is when we're unified. And I do think that we have kind of reimagined how we move forward, and the alliance is really like the best example of that that I can think of. So I appreciate Darren's, how you talked about that. I 100% agree. I do think in the past, before this administration, even that, there have been a lot of things, like Donna said, that are thrown out and or done intentionally to divide the tribes, because when that happens, we're not there collectively and we're not as strong as we can be. I don't think that's necessarily the case now. I think we're working through things when we don't agree, and it can be tough. And I agree with Molly, and I remember looking at it as a child with my dad being chief and thinking, oh my goodness, I don't ever want to be in tribal politics. This is awful. But I think that we're able to have those conversations. And I have non-tribal people who have worked for us before or just are close with the community and say, I've never seen anything like it. You guys can scream and yell and fight about things, and then everybody loves each other like the next day or a couple hours later, and you're sitting down and breaking bread together. So that's family. It is. You're 100% right. So I think you all have really wonderful points. I do feel like we definitely have changed how we're moving forward with these things, with especially with the state, with the federal government, and staying unified, even if we don't always agree on, different issues. We're able to sit down, have conversations respectfully, and move through those things. And I do think that that is at the crux of where we're at now. I just think that there is a movement in the state of Maine, and we've created that because we've changed how we've maybe done things or been reacting to things in the state. So I'm really happy and excited with where things are. I know we don't have everything that we want and wish we could have fixed, but I'm really hopeful, and we have been able to make movement, and I think that that's wonderful too. So,
So, Kirk, we'll let you close out with your comments.
well, first of all, I think this was a great way to wake up. We should do this a couple times a week and talk about these issues. But I think again, I'm really proud and optimistic of where we are. What I've learned over my time as chief is I can only control what we do. If we're going to respect sovereignty, we have to understand that we're these issues involve four sovereigns and the state, and it's complicated and it can be messy. And I just try to stay focused on getting through these issues with some progress. And so, like I said, I'm extremely optimistic. If you look at just the past 10 years, and I know I'm not telling you anything, Donna, you don't already know, but even in the early 2000s, when I was first starting out, I said I would go, I'm going to go to Augusta and change the world. They're going to love me. It's going to be awesome. And I really had my eyes opened to just that whole political arena and how things work, and things aren't that simple. But yeah, so I think we're in a good place. And if you look at it since then, I mean, we couldn't even get bills out of committee back then. Now, not only are they getting out of committee, they're getting positive votes. We're also, you have gubernatorial candidates, people running for federal office. All of these things have to talk about tribal sovereignty, and that's a top three issue. With all of these campaigns, we're holding gubernatorial debates. We're holding Senate debates within our communities. We're doing things that were unimaginable not that long ago. And so sometimes I just try to pick my head up a little bit through all the focus on what needs to be done, and try to take some time to reflect on the things that have been done. And I think it's a reflection to on all the hard work and diplomatic skills and strength of the tribes and in our allies. So yeah, I think the future's bright for us in this area.
So with that, we'll end the show. And I want to thank my guests, Marlene Bryant, Dr. Darren Ranko, special guest Chief Clarissa Sabatis, and Chief Kirk Francis for their leadership and for helping us better understand what is at stake this legislative session. Over these two programs, we've talked about sovereignty, not as a right to be given, but as a right to be recognized. The decisions made in Augusta this session will not just affect policy. They will shape the relationship between the state of Maine and the Wabanaki Nations for years to come. Our nations are sovereign. The question before the legislature is whether that sovereignty will be recognized and be respected in practice. Thank you for joining us for this two-part series. I'm Donna Loring. See you again next month for another Wabanaki Windows.